You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Richard Justice of MLB.com, joined by Alden Gonzalez, who covers the Angels for MLB.com. Alden, going into the postseason, what are the worries that Mike Scioscia and the club has right now?
Well, Richard, it starts and ends with their rotation. There's a lot of question marks with their starting rotation going into the playoffs. They've been in a four-man rotation ever since Garrett Richards went down, and that was fine because they just needed to get through the regular season, and they knew that when the playoffs came, they could trim it to four starters, maybe even three. Right now they have one. They have Jared Weaver, who's been pitching well. He's finishing off the season really strong. And beyond that, they have three question marks. C.J. Wilson recorded only two outs against the A's on Monday, walked six batters, gave six runs, four of them earned. He hasn't had a good year. Hector Santiago, who was really coming on strong for like a two-month stretch, he's recorded a total of nine outs in his last two starts. He's been really erratic again. And the biggest one is Matt Shoemaker. He's nursing an oblique strain that is kind of going to put his status for the postseason down to the wire. He's kind of threw from 90 feet today, but he only threw about 60%, and he's not going to pitch again during the regular season. And, the best bet for him is that maybe he gets off the mound at some point during the workouts next week. But the point is they're going to go into the playoffs not knowing what they're going to get out of Shoemaker, and he's going to have had like about 3 weeks off. And who knows with these oblique strains. There's a lot of question marks right now with this rotation. I mean, CJ and Hector have to step up, obviously. But if Matt Shoemaker's not ready for the American League Division Series, and that's certainly a possibility, you're looking at Jared Weaver coming back on short rest or Corey Rasmus starting game four and then having to go to a bullpen game. So, it's a good thing that the Angels clinched early and they could rest up some of their veteran guys. But they have a lot of decisions to sort through now before those rosters are due on October 2nd.
Alden, do you think Mike Scioscia will still slot C.J. Wilson into game two and just hope that a guy who's had ups and downs through his career will get it figured out?
Yeah, Richard, I don't think he has much choice, to be honest with you. I think ideally maybe Matt Shoemaker would have gotten it just because he had pitched so well down the stretch. But, given his oblique strain, I think you want to give him as much time as possible to heal up and be ready to try to make a start. Yeah, you throw C.J. Wilson out there and you hope for the best. And, C.J. Wilson is about as enigmatic as they come. And we've seen it over the course of his last two starts. The night that they clinched, C.J. Wilson threw seven scoreless innings. He was attacking hitters like he really hasn't all year. He had a pitch efficiency that he really didn't have all year. And, you looked at him pitching like, man, this is that number two guy. This is the number two guy that the Angels need to advance to the American League Championship Series. And then he comes out against the A's and he can't find the strike zone. It's kind of a point where you really don't know what you're going to expect from C.J. Wilson. But given the way the rotation is right now, that's all Scioscia could do. Slot him into that number two spot and just hope for the best.
Well, Alden, when you talk to C.J., does he seem confused? Does he seem confident? What's his demeanor now when the games count the most?
He's relaxed. CJ always feels like he has it figured out. We talked to him after that game, and the one thing that he said is you don't really want to take too much away from a loss. And what he means by that is, you don't want to really dwell on it too much and lose confidence. He says he looked at tape and he figured out what he was doing wrong. Maybe I guess it was too complex to explain to us, but. The main thing with CJ is he feels like his pitches are crisp. He feels like he's getting good sinking action on his two-seamer. He feels like his fastball is lively. He feels like his slider is good. And his changeup, which has been the pitch that he's used most frequently this season, is there. The sharpness of his pitches is there, and he's healthy. So I guess those are good signs. The problem is just getting them over the strike zone, being able to locate with them. That was his issue. He says he looked at he exited so early that he had about 3 hours to look at game tape, frame-by-frame snapshots of his start. After he came out, he says he found the solution, but he said that before, and then he goes back to just not attacking hitters. So he's just, maybe this is a little oversimplistic, but he really needs to just get into that attack mentality and trust his stuff. And not try to overthink the game. I think when he does that, that's when he's really good.
Boy, it puts a lot of attention and pressure on Jared Weaver. Of course, you know, he's the number one guy, and I guess he's accustomed to that. I mean, it's nothing new there, I guess, right?
No, I think he likes it, Richard. I really think he does. I think, he was a little bit spoiled coming up with the Angels and being in the playoffs every year,
Right.
This is a given. We're going to win the division. We're going to be in the playoffs. I'm going to get to pitch in October. I think not being there the last 4 years has really left a sour taste in his mouth, and I think he enjoyed them clinching more so than anybody else simply because he kind of tasted the bitter a little bit, and he loves pitching in games like this. He loves pitching in big games. I'll never forget, Richard, the last day of the 2012 regular season, the Angels were mathematically eliminated 3 days earlier from postseason contention. But Jared Weaver still had a lot to pitch for. We were in Seattle. He was making the last start. He had a really good case for the Cy Young. And, it was between him and a bunch of other people. But, the narrative going in was, if Jared Weaver has a solid start to finish the season, he's really going to put himself as maybe a clear-cut favorite for his first Cy Young award. He went out there and just didn't have anything. And I don't even think he made it through the first inning before Mike Socha pulled him out of the game and just said, that's it, your season's done. I remember talking to him after the game, and all he said was, my heart was just wasn't in it because we weren't playing for anything. So it was just, even though maybe a personal award was on the line here, it was just hard for me to get up for this game. He loves pitching in the big postseason games. And we've seen it the last five or six starts. Ever since Jared Richards went down, Jared Weaver's fastball a little bit more lively. He's got a 2.72 ERA in his last six starts. And, Richard, I don't think that's a coincidence. Jared just really loves these moments.
Where are we with Josh Hamilton's health? What will be his availability, and how effective do you think he'll be?
I think that there's no doubt that he's going to be I'm not going to say there's no doubt. I think there's a very good chance that he's going to be in the lineup for the American League Division Series. And I also think that he will be in the lineup without having seen much live pitching. And I think the simple fact of the matter is, it's not like the Angels have all these great options to plug in there. I don't think Josh Hamilton is going to bat cleanup in game one of the ALDS, but maybe he'll bat seventh or eighth. And it's not like he's going to be batting seventh or eighth, and it's going to be at the expense of some other guy who could really help them. The Angels' best bet is still to have Josh Hamilton in the lineup and see if he could just catch lightning in a bottle. He had a recovery day today. He took some swings on Tuesday and Monday, but he's not even able to pick up a baseball right now. So he can't really get into any defensive work. It's starting to look like he's going to maybe be a DH in the playoffs and maybe see some live pitching during the workout days. He was still hopeful of returning to the lineup on Friday in Seattle, but that still looks a little bit iffy. I think the best bet for Mike Socha is maybe get him some at-bats Saturday or Sunday, have him see some pitching in maybe a simulated game during the workout dates, and just like Matt Shoemaker, put him in the lineup, see what he's got.
It's interesting, you look at the Angels, you say, well, they have a ton of problems. But, Oakland's going to go in without a lot of confidence. Detroit has very nervous innings at the back of the bullpen. Baltimore's feeling pretty good. But so, it'll be fascinating to see how it plays out. And we can't wait for your coverage on it. And I appreciate your time, Alden. We'll talk to you next week. I'm joined by Jane Lee of MLB.com, who covers the A's. Jane, despite their best efforts, the Oakland A's look like they're going to make the playoffs. They've lost 6 out of 9, but they've got a 3-game lead with 4 to play. Might even end up hosting the wild card game. I guess all things considered, what they didn't want, they're going to end up being pretty darn happy to get.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're at the point now where they know if they can just get there, which right now it seems very plausible they do, they know it's a completely different season. They know they have John Lester for that game, and from there, anything can happen. I mean, once you're in, you're in. And as much as they wanted to avoid this exact scenario, this is kind of all they can hope for. And it's not even like they're still fighting for it. I mean, they really have to thank Seattle for just, their sudden collapse. And you mentioned their last homestand, a really rough one. and now they're in Texas. And, I mean, the best thing they can do, you know, even though it looks like they'll get in, is just carry some momentum into that game, you know, get a good feeling going. And they really need that, especially with the offense.
And Jane, Scott told me the other day, I said, okay, who do you like, 10 teams, 12 teams at that point we're discussing? And he said, you know what? Through everything, I still like Oakland because I look at it, they're going to they've still got the pitching to carry them through. You know, Anaheim's pitching, the Angels' pitching is not great. Detroit's has been up and down. You know, Baltimore's pitching very well. So I guess my question in a long-winded roundabout way is, if I wanted to be optimistic, or if I'm an A's fan, I want to be optimistic, can you give me a couple of reasons to be optimistic about Tuesday?
Yeah, I mean, in one word, pitching. I mean, pitching will carry a team in the playoffs. And granted, we have seen what little offense can do for this team the past few years. That's why they've been bounced from the first round. But, you know, they also didn't have Lester those 2 years. And Lester's a guy who can, you know, match the opponent 0-for-0. And you have to think, you know, if they can get past that wild card game, and, you know, likely they're going to be playing the Angels, who don't counter with as good of pitching, I mean, the A's could very well win that series. I mean, I was talking to a few people this week, and everyone's thinking, you know what, as ironic as it's going to be, this is going to be their way past the first round, is playing the Angels.
Right.
Just because of the pitching. And, you know, even though the Angels ended up running away with the division, I think the A's best chance to get past that first round is playing that exact team just because of the pitching matchup.
What have you learned through this very tough stretch? What have you learned about the leaders of that clubhouse and about Bob Melvin in keeping it together and keeping the focus on, okay, let's play tomorrow, we can't do anything about today?
Yeah, I mean, we'll start with Melvin, because, I mean, throughout all this, you really feel for him. You know, he, as a manager, you can only do so much. And you're thinking, okay, we played the entire first half, you know, really great baseball in the first half. And then to have such a dramatic downfall, what happened? And, you know, you really don't have time to catch your breath and think about it and try to figure it out, because you still have a game to play the next day. And so I think he's been really good just about, you know, taking it one game at a time. And, you know, there's a lot of talk about momentum, but this team also realizes, you know, hey, we can't really worry about momentum, because we just have to worry about the day. I mean, this is a team that's struggling, you know, to win one game, let alone two in a row or three in a row. So they're just kind of focused on the day. And inside the clubhouse, I think some leaders have emerged that weren't there before. I think a guy like Josh Donaldson, who maybe thought, you know, he hasn't been around a lot enough, or he doesn't have that veteran presence to really step up and say something. But, you know, he realizes, okay, wait, somebody has to. And so he has. And then, you know, you have a Johnny Gomes and the John Lesters and those true veteran presence in there. But some of the young guys, you know, I think realized throughout the stretch did have to step up. And I think they're only, you know, better for it.
Yeah, it's really weird. Wouldn't it be strange after all these years since 2000, and all the years we thought this is the year for the A's, this is the year for the A's, that the year when they looked the worst coming down the stretch, this might be a year, because, you know, the A's, like you said, the Angels pitching is not going to knock your socks off. Detroit's been up and down. And who knows with Baltimore, that'd probably be another series. But it's been fun. We look forward to your coverage, and we'll see you soon, Jane. Thank you. And I'm joined by Greg Johns of MLB.com. Greg, it's been a tough couple of weeks for the Mariners. Can you put into words what the level of disappointment is in apparently not making the postseason?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a tough blow to the gut for a team that's been right there. And they're still saying, hey, we're still mathematically in it. We just got to win out and see what happens. But there's no question the air, you know, has gone out of this balloon with a tough road trip that they just haven't done what they've done all year, which is win on the road and pitch well. You know, it's been their formula for success, and it just has not happened on this last trip. They're 3-6 on the trip with their starters have an ERA of 9.15 in those nine games. You're just not going to win that way. And the backbone of this team has been that rotation, and they literally have run out of gas, it would seem. It's tough. I mean, they keep saying the right things, and we're not tired. It's just we're just not making the pitches, but it's been a different team down the stretch, and Elias they had to shut down with the sore elbow. Iwakuma has not been the same guy for his last five or six starts. Chris Young had moved out of the rotation. He just innings got up to a point that he just wasn't effective as they had hoped, and even Paxton and Felix, really the two guys they counted on, the two worst starts, literally their careers here in the last two outings. So it's just been tough to watch, and they're wearing it. It's not a happy group right now.
I don't want to wear rose-colored glasses, and I know that would not be accurate, but. Do you think after the disappointment in a week or two that they're going to look back and say, you know what, for the franchise, we took a step in the right direction this year. It wasn't the step we wanted, but it was a step. We're going to go into next year with everybody paying attention to us and, feeling pretty good about our ability to win the division.
Well, there's no question that's the attitude they should take, and I'm sure they will. The big picture is much different than the small picture that they're in right
sure.
now, which is the disappointment of how it ended. But the big picture is this is the first winning season the Mariners have had since 2009, and they've pushed for a playoff spot right down to the last days of the season, and those are things that frankly coming out of spring I don't know that anybody would have expected. When they signed Cano, a lot of people said why would Robinson Cano go to Seattle? It's a team that doesn't contend. Well, they did contend. They are contending. And they need to add a couple more pieces. But I think what you see in the big picture is they have far fewer questions than they had a year ago as far as going into the offseason. They answered a lot of questions. They filled some spots this year, made some moves that have worked, and really now they've just got to finish the puzzle. Instead of build the puzzle from scratch. So that's a lot better position to be in. Certainly they've got to, step up offensively a little better and support the pitching that they have had. The pitching staff returns largely intact. Most of those guys are coming back, except Chris Young is the one guy on a one-year deal this year. Everybody else should be back, and largely the position players are back. So, a couple moves, and this team should be right there. And I think that the expectations next year will be much different than they were this year.
Yeah, and I think going forward, is there one part of the team that you think Jack Cerenjic and Lloyd McClendon see as a concern?
Well, I think they've got to get a DH. They just need a bat there, a consistent bat. They had their DH, this year they signed Hart. That deal just really didn't work out. His knees just weren't back yet. They brought in Morales, Kendrys Morales, in the last couple months.
Sure.
Whether because of his late start or whatever, he hasn't been the bat that he was a year ago. They've got to answer that. They had the lowest numbers in the AL at the DH spot, so that's a big position. That's obviously a hitting position. A team that needs hitting, that's a pretty easy place to start if you want to make an upgrade. But other than that, they may be looking for a right fielder or an upgrade here or there. But they're pretty set in most places. Yeah, they're far more set than they were a year ago, and certainly I think if they can add a bat or two, they'll be in pretty good shape.
All right. Greg Johns of MLB.com. I appreciate your time. We'll talk to you down the road. Thanks. And I'm joined by Brian McTaggart of MLB.com. He's covered the Houston Astros. It's kind of an interesting season for the Astros and a season where you can sort of see the next wave coming. But first, let's talk about the best news of all for the Astros, the most exciting player, Jose Altuve. It looks like he's going to be the first Astro to ever win a batting title, a remarkable year leading the American League in hits and stolen bases and batting average. And Brian McTaggart's got a great story coming out on MLB.com, on Astros.com, where he talked to hitting coach Don Mattingly about his work with Altuve. Brian, just talk about this incredible Jose Altuve.
Well, yeah, you know, it's, you know, this is not a fluke that this is happening. I mean, Jose Altuve put in a lot of work to get to where he is. I mean, he was a pretty good player before, even though most people outside Houston probably didn't know much about him other than he was short. But he put in a lot of work, and he came to spring training, and he and John Mailey, the hitting coach, who's maybe the hardest working hitting coach in baseball, they sat down, and Mailey said, "What do we want to do? What do you want to improve on?" And first of all, Altuve had already done a lot of work in Venezuela, getting himself in great shape. He came to camp 10 pounds slimmer, and you know, he was the old best shape of his life. But it was true in his case. But they set out with some goals, and one of them was to make the All-Star team. One of them was to win a batting title. They actually talked about that early in the year. He thought he had it in him to win a batting title. In other words, they were going to have to do things to get there. And so they overhauled his swing mechanics so he could handle off-speed pitches better. They had a little knee tuck, so he stayed in motion and wasn't striding too early. And he was out in front of a lot of off-speed stuff, but this helped him keep his stride so he wouldn't have a big lead kick as he used to. He was able to time pitches better. And he stayed in motion, and his batting average and balls in play went up. His OPS is up. Just a phenomenal amount of work behind the scenes. And this was a day-to-day thing, and it still continues today. They still look at video of pitchers. Jose Altuve, they study every pitcher. How did he pitch me? How did he get me out? He got me out here. Well, he's not going to do that again. We're going to make adjustments. And just really a phenomenal story for Jose Altuve. He's put in a lot of work to get to where he is.
You know, and he's a short guy. He's got a very friendly demeanor. I take it his teammates really love the guy, and he's a fan favorite. But there's obviously a really tough core to this kid that he believes in himself. Because, you know, he's had a lot of people tell him, hey, you ain't good enough. You know, I mean, there were teams that just said, hey, we're not signing a guy 5'5". We don't care what your skills are. There obviously is a toughness to this guy and a confidence that he believes he can do all these things, right?
Yeah, you're exactly right. And you know, you touched on it. He's just because of his size, everyone's kind of doubted him all along. Even when the Astros were considering signing him, they talked about the little guy. Well, they were looking at some other players, and then one of the scouts said, well, what about the little guy? And one or two scouts stood up for him and said, you know what? This guy can hit. He can run. Let's give him a shot. And they invited him to camp in Venezuela, and the rest is history. But he's become the face of the franchise, literally. I mean, his banner is hanging from the side of Minute Maid Park, and that's important. I mean, that there's a lot of weight that comes with that, and I don't think Altuve takes that lightly. Yeah, he's very friendly, and he's always smiling. He's loving every minute of this, but he understands the importance of what he's doing, not only for him and the Astros, but for his country. I mean, he's a superstar in Venezuela. He's got more hits in the season than any Venezuelan player, and he really wears that on his sleeve as well. So he takes nothing lightly about what he's doing this year.
Brian, the Astros would like Jim Cranes, he'd like to win 81 games next year. I think what he said is he'd like to contend. But let's start with getting to 500. Can you go through maybe one, two, or three moves Jeff Luhnow could realistically make and to help him get to that goal? No, but apart from the farm system, just what does he need to do? What do you think's his shopping list?
Yeah, well, before – I give you that. I mean, number one, if George Springer's healthy, that'll take them a long way to being there. But as far as the moves he needs to make, number one is going to be the bullpen. And he tried to do that last year, and it was just a bust because Jesse Crane and Matt Albers just couldn't get on the field. Crane all year, and Albers only pitched in 8 games. Chad Qualls did okay, but struggled at times as closer. But the bullpen, the money they spent and they had constructed just didn't work out. And they're going to have to address that once again. I think that's going to be their biggest thing, maybe not signing the 34-year-old veterans, but maybe guys in the prime of their career. So they're going to have to spend some money. I think number two is really adding an impact bat in the outfield, maybe a corner outfield spot, play alongside Fowler if he comes back, and George Springer. They need somebody with a little thump in that lineup instead of to go with Springer and Chris Carter. They need one more thumper in that lineup. So I think that's number two. And I think number three, they're going to have to address the corner infield. They had the lowest production in the major leagues from the corner infielders at first and third. Jonathan Singleton's really struggled. You know, they're not giving up on him, but they need to have an alternative they can put in there. Matt Dominguez regressed this year. What are they going to do with him? So I think those are the three moves that he's going to have to do in the offseason to improve the club.
Well, do you think these last 100 games or whatever it's been, have changed their assessment of what John Singleton can be in the big league?
You know, if they have, they're not saying. I mean, I can't imagine that that they can't have some concerns at this point. And, you know, Tom Lawless, the interim manager, has been pretty candid in his playing time for Singleton and what he saw. I mean, in the game on Tuesday night in Arlington, Singleton strikes out his first two at-bats, and then with a key spot coming up, a pinch hit for him. And after the game, Lawless said, we just couldn't afford to have him go out there and strike out. We have to get somebody in there. So, you know, I think there is probably a growing level of concern. That being said, you know, he's still got less than 330 at-bats in the major leagues, and they have a lot of money invested in him. So they're going to give him a shot. And, you know, we talked earlier about John Mailey. He works some magic with Chris Carter, works some magic with Altuve, and Singleton might be his biggest assignment yet.
But on a positive side, it would seem with Keuchel, with McHugh, with what they saw of Springer, it has been a step forward for the organization as a whole this season. But I guess it's a reminder of how much there still is to do, right?
Yeah, and you can argue they won 51 games last year. You know, there was nowhere to go but up. But the fact is they're going to end around 70, 71 wins, which is, you know, no matter how you slice it, that's, you know, you improved by 20 games. You did some things right. And I think you mentioned the rotation. I think that's probably the biggest reason for optimism right now, because you have a pretty solid 1-2-3. Feldman has quietly had maybe the best season of his career, and if he wouldn't have gotten hurt, probably would be the best season of his career. And then McHugh, if he would have had 8 more innings, would be in the top 5 or 6 in ERA. Dallas Keuchel's in the top 10 in ERA. He had a great season. So, and then you have options for the other two rotation spots. They got tons of young arms coming up. Fulton Evans is going to be given a shot to win it after pitching in relief. So that's one area I don't think they really need to touch in the offseason, believe it or not, is starting pitching. And we all know it kind of starts and ends on the mound.
All right. It'll be an interesting offseason. Appreciate your time, Brian. We'll talk to you again down the road. Joined by my longtime friend and co-worker, T.R. Sullivan, who's had an interesting season. 64 players on the Rangers, 93 losses. I think I counted up 22 different pitchers had won a game. So, T.R., when the mess finally ends for the Rangers on Sunday, what are the priorities for John Daniels going into the offseason?
Finding the manager.
Now, do you think I think you believe, or correct me if I'm wrong, that Tim Bogart is the odds-on favorite to get the job, that he's handled himself well enough?
Well, they've won 11 out of 12 as of going into Wednesday's game or Thursday's game, whatever day this is. But, you know, he certainly increased his chances with the way he's handled himself. But, you know, what John Daniels said was, you know, we want to make sure we find the right guy, and we owe it to our fans, we owe it to the organization, we owe it to everybody to conduct a thorough search, and we owe it to Tim Bogart to make sure that, you know, he feels like he's the right man and that he won the job on a knockout rather than having it handed to him. So, you know, there's some other factors involved. You know, Major League Baseball has certain criteria they want followed. So, you know, there will be a search, and there will be people interviewed beyond Tim Bogart, but he certainly has made a strong case to be the right guy.
Now, you and I are veteran guys, and you've been around a lot of managers. What do you think of this guy? Does he strike you as a major league manager in the way he carries himself, deals with players, runs a game, all that stuff?
Well, he certainly knows the game inside and out. I mean, he's been a minor league manager, a major league coach. He played for many years. You know, he's got a good personality about him. You know, a little bit quiet, but very, you know, intense. I think so far the players have reacted to him very well. I mean, obviously you got to see the guy for 162 games to get a real gauge of what he's about. You know, if you want to look at a comparison, you can look at a guy like, you know, Bob Melvin would be kind of a guy that's very similar to Tim's style, maybe a little bit of a John Farrell type, you know, those kind of guys. And I think on the long run, his personality has a chance to play very well in a major league clubhouse.
And so as we go forward, do you think John will be active in free agency in terms of shoring up the starting rotation, or do you think he's more likely to do it through trade?
Well, they certainly have more than enough to trade with a very abundant farm system. I think it's obviously any team would rather do it through free agency and not give up the players. You know, obviously the draft choices are a factor. They were last year. I would think you would start off with free agency simply because because you don't have to give up the player. But, you know, I'm sure there'll be much trade talk during the offseason.
And TR, of the 64 players you've seen, have there been a guy or two that jump out at you that you would think Ranger fans deservedly should get excited about seeing? Maybe a guy that they didn't know on opening day or didn't know what to expect anything of?
Well, certainly Rougned Odor, the young second baseman who, you know, nobody expected to be up here because we all thought Jurickson Profar would be the starting second baseman. He has certainly played very well. He's improved significantly over the course of the summer. I think he's a guy that people can get excited about. A left-handed hitting second baseman, plays with a lot of energy and intensity. You know, some of these other guys that's come up here, Ryan Rua, Jake Smolinski. You know, I think the guy that's really kind of impressed people is Lisa Alberto Bonilla. He's come up here with three starts, won all three, first Rangers pitcher to ever win his first three starts. Of course, it's September, but, you know, the teams he was beating were teams in the pennant race. You know, he beat the Braves, and, you know, he's pitched very well. So he's a guy I think people are getting excited about, too.
Yeah, and Tierra, as the Rangers won over the last 5 years, won all these games, we would always say, but it all begins with the fact that John Daniels built a great farm system. And so that's still true, and that is one of the backstories of this season is that depth in the farm system is still pretty impressive, right? It's a place to build from.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about guys like Joey Gallo, who's, you know, had a tremendous, you know, season in the minor leagues, you know, one of the top home run hitters, one of the top power prospects, MVP of the Futures game. You know, Nick Williams is an outfielder, some good young pitching, Alex Gonzalez and Luke Jackson. I mean, there's a bunch of names that are really George Alfaro, their young catcher. I mean, a lot of good young names there. And, you know, they picked up a couple of good arms and some trades, getting, you know, Jake Thompson, a good starting pitcher from the Tigers for Joaquin Soria. And they're kind of like a kid named Spencer Patton who's pitched well in relief. They got him for Jason Frazier. You know, next year they're going to get the – you know, high draft pick, not necessarily the number one, but, you know, if you have a bad year, you can rebound and you can always come away with a Clayton Kershaw or somebody like that in the draft. So, you know, the farm system is still very, very, very strong.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. They've lost 93 games. Fans are disappointed. And yet there's so many pieces to like and to build from. The only thing is John Daniels has to try to blend it all together into 25 or whatever it is, 35-man roster to prepare for the season. It'll be fascinating to watch unfold, and we look forward to your coverage. And I thank you, TR. Thanks for listening to MLB.com Extras, the American League West.